Welcome to Hype, episode 114. My name is Selena and I have Pam here with me. Only regular host at the moment, Pam, who is on every show.
Oh my gosh, how embarrassing.
No, that's a good thing.
Well, only if everybody isn't tired of me, so.
I'm sure nobody is tired of you. The most that someone is tired of you was your audio.
I know, how but embarrassing. I'm like, fixed. I really want to pull that show down now.
No. It was a good show. We are, I guess addressing this straight off the bat, we are aware of the audio issues that have plagued the show for the last couple of weeks, and we really appreciate your patience as we sort it out. And it should be sorted, you know, crossing fingers, everything should sound good right now. And we really appreciate listeners, your feedback and your comments and everything, and bad audio sucks, so we're very happy that has all been resolved. Welcome to Hype, guys. The audio edition. My name is Selena. Did I say that? I may have done so. And we have a packed show for you this week with the latest entertainment news stories. We're going to talk about some of the movies that we've been watching, and we are going to talk about some of the TV shows that have been premiering over the past month, sort of to continue the theme from our big fall TV special that came out a few days ago. Before we get into that, however, we do want to remind you of the contact information so you can get in touch with us about this show or anything else that you maybe want us to talk about, any specials that you want us to do, anything like that. You can do that either by finding us on Twitter, which is at Hypeable Hype. You can find us on Instagram at Hypeable Hype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And of course, you can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypeable.com. And you can leave comments there. You can also email us, which is hype@hypeable.com. So the first thing, as always, that we're going to do is how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. And we have pretty much, as I said, been watching movies. And I think I'm going to, Pam, if you do your first one, I'll do mine and we'll go back to you. You're sort of, not only are you always here, you're also doing the How We Hype work of two people because you have two things. So,
oh my gosh, I'm such a little overachiever. Yeah, I'll do my first one. I'll talk about Sully. Sully, of course, is based on a true story. I'm sure most of you, in at least in America, I'm not sure if the story went like international. Actually, this guy who was piloting an airline actually realized, like right after he took off, that the engines were failing because a bunch of birds struck the plane. And they had to land the plane in the Hudson River in New York City.
Oh, I did hear about this story.
Yeah, so this happened back in 2009. And I wanted to go see this because this story was like, this is like a personal anecdote, but when I had my first ever internship in journalism, I interned at KTVU Channel 2 News out here in San Francisco. They're based out in Oakland, California, but they're like the big cable news network out in the Bay Area. And one of my first assignments was like greeting Captain Sully and taking him over to where he needed to be so he could do this interview with the anchors. And it was like, it was so interesting because he was like the national headline. And then like, here I am, this little intern, like taking this guy over. And he was very polite and very quiet. And so when I watched this movie, I thought it was very interesting that Tom Hanks is a great actor, but he really played this guy to a T, and you could see it from like the interviews and stuff like that. But then just like having had personal interaction with him as well, and like seeing him in a newsroom setting, which is like, you know, some of this does take place in interview settings in the movie. He did play the character or like the person very well, which is always nice to see. But the movie's really great. It's directed by Clint Eastwood. He likes to take on these dramas a lot. And it's a little emotional because you really do see the city coming together. New York City was able to come together in conjunction with these two pilots that saved all these people by landing in the river and make sure everybody got out safely. Nobody died. And that's why they call it the Miracle on the Hudson.
So the movie is called Sully, right?
Mm-hmm. It's about him.
that explains why I haven't heard of this, because I've seen everybody talking about this movie called Sully, and I'm like, why is this not a thing over here? That's because in Denmark, the movie is called The Miracle on the Hudson River.
Right.
And I didn't know who Sully was, so I didn't connect the two until you said Tom Hanks, and I was like, hold on a second.
Yeah, so The Miracle on the Hudson is, I believe, I might be getting my facts wrong, it's the name of the book. Like, they based it on a book that told the story about everything that happened. So what I didn't know at the time, because, you know, like, I guess I just, like, it didn't process to me that because they landed, they left from, oh my gosh, I can't remember. I believe they left from JFK. And they had to turn around very quickly. They didn't leave from very far away. So when they were turning around, they told the pilots, like, well, like, this airport is 7 miles away. This airport is whatever miles away. Like, or get back to the original tarmac. And that's when Sully and his co-pilot, they made the decision that, like, they were not going to make it. Both engines had failed. The only, like, safest way to make sure that everybody had a chance of living was to land the plane right in the Hudson River. And because they chose to do that, it was a big insurance thing for, like, the airline, and they had to get, like, they had to, like, file a full case report. They had to investigate. They did, like, trial runs on, like, simulated machines to see if, like, he actually could, like, make, who could have made it back or could have made it to any of these other airlines that they were directing him to. So a lot of it does have to do with, like, his struggle in terms of, like, dealing with all of this. First of all, realizing that, like, he very well could have died. He could have killed everybody on board. Mm-hmm. And then also knowing that, like, he could be getting, like, his license revoked because the airline is launching a full investigation. So it kind of centers around, like, that time period where he was kind of stuck in New York City waiting for this mandate to go down. And wow. And then focusing on, like, the flashbacks of what actually happened on the day. So it was really well done. We really enjoyed it. My family and I went out to see it. And yeah, it was a good time.
Wow. So my movie that I've seen, sort of going in a completely different track, is Bridget Jones's Baby, which, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably realize, because I've been, like, somewhat obsessed with it. Hashtag no regrets. And it's actually, it was a funny story, because in Denmark, my parallel life, I worked for a Danish news outlet that's very similar to Hypebol. And I went to see the movie actually at the Danish gala premiere. And I had, like, I came there with the intent of, like, doing some, like, live, like, blog, like, coverage for social media and stuff. And there weren't any of the stars there. So, like, I didn't meet Colin Firth. So everyone calm down. I'm still alive, which I would not have been otherwise. But there were, like, a bunch of Danish celebrities that I had no idea who they were. And I brought my brother because I was like, I figured he would have a better chance. He did not. And I only got to talk to one person who was, like, the one actress I knew. I got her to say that she was Team Darcy, which was, like, my journalism accomplishment of the evening. But then I went to see the movie itself. And I don't know if you've seen it, Pam. Like, this is such a good movie. Like, I'm so in love with it. Have you seen this movie?
I haven't had time, and I want to so badly. I've been consoling myself by rewatching the first two. And I don't think I'm going to be able to get to it this weekend because of the Emmys, which I'm sorry. I feel like I stole that from you because I know you wanted
No. Anyone can bring it up.
Well, I'm actually on my side hustle. No, I'm just kidding. Like, that's, like, my real hustle, and unfortunately, Hype is my side hustle. But my real job is actually covering entertainment news for another outlet as well, because
Like two timing.
We are two timing. Hypeable. You know, you gotta make that paper so this show runs, because we can't do it for free, guys. Anyway, so I work for another outlet, and I'm on Emmy's duty tonight. So I've been preparing for that all week. But yeah, because of that, I'm not gonna be able to, like, really leave between recording this and then getting ready for red carpet and all that stuff. Mm.
Right. Yeah, of course. But I won't don't worry, no spoilers. Because obviously this is a movie that you don't want to be spoiled. You know, it's almost like as big as Star Wars in that regard, I would say. I Am Your Father, literally, same thing.
Well, they recorded two different endings, right? So not even the cast.
Wouldn't it be funny? I've been thinking about that, like, if they legitimately, like, divided so that like some countries got one ending and some got another one.
Oh my gosh.
That would be really funny.
Could you imagine like everybody like waking up? It's like, surprise, we know who the father is. But they're, yes. then like, you know, two yeah. rival outlets are like, wait, like I know who the father is. No, I know who the father is. No, it's this guy. No, it's this guy.
That would be the best. Like, imagine the press that would get. Anyway, that's not important. Next time. But so like this movie, like I'm a huge fan of Bridget Jones. Like even the second movie, which is like panned, I think it's hilarious. But the first movie is like one of those things that I watch it every Christmas. It's really weird, like really stupid, but I watch it every Christmas and I like fall a little bit more in love with Mr. Darcy every time. And I had like such a high hope for this film, and it totally lived up to it. Like I had one issue with it that I actually wrote a whole article about in Hyperbole. And it seems like when you think about it in context, you're like, oh, it's not such a big deal. But actually, I do think it's a big deal. But that's like the one thing. And it definitely does not ruin the enjoyment of the rest of the film for me. And the one thing I will say that's not, it's not a spoiler. Like, it's just an observation is that the, you know, the two friends, Shazza and Jude, in the film, they swap personalities. So it's Jude who's the really sweary one. And Shazza, who's like the more calmed down of the two, which I think is really funny because director Sharon Maguire, who also worked on the first one, the author of Helen, what's her name? Fielding? Why can I not remember?
Yeah, that's her name. That's Helen Fielding.
Helen Fielding. Mm-hmm. She based Shazza on Sharon Maguire. So she would know. Which I just, it's so weird. And if you watch the movie, you can sort of, you can maybe weigh in on this too. But I noticed that, and that really stuck out to me as being strange. But yes, amazing, really great, really funny, really like lighthearted and life affirming and all of those things, and age positive, if you will, you know, because all of these 40-year-old women and men are running around like having babies, and that's like totally normal. So very, very enjoyable. Highly recommend. A+.
Well, I have another movie that's kind of along those same lines. Definitely age positive because it does star Sally Field, who is the leading lady. And when was the last time you saw her?
Who is the oldest person in the world?
No, but she is so wonderful. I always kind of forget how good of an actress she is. And then you see her in something like Hello, My Name is Doris, which is a romantic comedy that came out April of this year. So a couple of months back.
I haven't even heard of this one.
It's an indie comedy. It's wonderful. And also co-stars Max Greenfield from New Girl, so that might be a pull. It kind of centers around a May-December romance, sort of. Sally Field plays Doris, and she goes to this kind of self-help seminar, and it kind of inspires her to like kind of get out of this rut that she's in. She wants to feel younger, so she starts like, you know, doing more lively things. And as a result, she's like really attracted to this younger coworker that comes over. It's Max Greenfield. And he's kind of like this young gun hotshot from the West Coast coming over to work at her company in New York. And with the help of her best friend's teenage granddaughter, she kind of sets out on a plight to be like younger and hipper instead of, you know, feeling older and ailing. And it's really great. The cringe factor in some of the scenes is like really intense. We'll just put that out there because I get a lot of like TV show anxiety where I feel like the secondhand embarrassment. But it's like, it's a really lovely little film. I highly recommend it. I'll tweet out the trailer for it because I think the trailer will do a better job of selling it than I am. And you'll also see a lot of familiar faces in this. Natasha Lyonne is in it from Orange is the New Black, and so is Two Broke Girls' Beth Bears. And yeah, it's just really, really great. You can rent it on iTunes, and it's kind of just like available everywhere. So if you can't get out to the movies and you want to watch something fun, I highly recommend Hello, My Name is Doris.
Okay, that sounds awesome. Really cool. Now, that's everything for us. If you guys, the listeners, have seen any cool movies, please feel free to write in and recommend them, and we'll get to those sort of in the listener feedback, because obviously one of the things that we like to do on Hype is spread the word about cool things. So if you have a cool thing we're not mentioning, don't hesitate to make us aware of it. That would be really cool. Speaking of cool, overusing the word, whatever. So we're going to move into news now, where we have a bunch of different stories to talk about. We have two big trailers of very different genres. And I'm going to kick us off with a lighter the lighter one, which is, of course, the trailer for Disney's Moana, which is coming out. When is that coming out? I know it's coming out early November. Next year here.
In November just in America.
Mm-hmm. Here it's coming out in February. So boo. boo Denmark, as usual. Moana had a new trailer out on a couple of days ago, and it looks absolutely fantastic and beautiful and wonderful, and like this is going to be your new favorite movie. Have you seen this trailer, Pam?
Oh, of course. I'm in love with the idea for this, and it just looks so great. I'm sure I'll cry at some point because Disney's very good at making me do that, but it just looks so fun and wonderful.
It looks so fun. The water, Disney actually invented brand new technology to do all the water that like comprises like 80% of the film or something, like has water in it. And Moana is just this really badass, awesome Disney, like quote unquote princess, you know, that has to, I know it's hard to describe, but Disney has described it as this film of her going on this quest to save like her people without there being any romance, like without anything. Like she's legitimately just a straight up hero. And of course she has Dwayne Johnson's demigod Maui with her for the ride. And it looks like it's going to be really funny and really good and really cool. And I think this is like such a cool new role model for young girls and boys and me and Pam and everyone.
And everybody.
And Sally Field and everyone. Just go check that out if you haven't yet seen it, because it just looks amazing, you know. That's really all I have to say about it. I just thought it was really important to bring it up because it looks so cool. Mm-hmm. A funny story that might help tie us over to the next trailer story, which is in Denmark, this movie has received a brand new name. It's actually called Vaiana. And this is because the name Moana is apparently also the name of a porn star. Because Moan, I guess,
that's the
would be my guess.
Anecdote ever.
So they basically have to, like, in regions of the world, I think they did it in Spain too, they had to change their name to Vaiana. So all the, like, posters and stuff is totally different. And I think that's really funny and unfortunate. Which is the perfect transition to our next trailer.
Oh, yeah. Something a little darker, a shade darker, yes. Perhaps.
So perhaps several shades.
Perhaps several shades. We are living in an age where we have the new 50 Shades Grey trailer out. This is, of course, for the sequel 50 Shades Darker. And it's pretty much everything that you would expect. There's lavish trips in helicopters, and there's crazy parties going on, and Anna and Christian are there, and like I guess they've made up since the end of the last movie when they broke it off, kind of. I'm sure we'll get more into that as the movie begins.
Who needs continuity?
Exactly. So I will admit that I have read the first two books of this series because I felt like I could not properly judge without having immersed myself.
Okay, yeah, you needed the research.
Yeah, and it was it's actually, side note, a lot funnier if you play spot the Twilight parallels. That's what I did. So I can't, I cannot confirm, but I'm like 90% positive that in this one, not Bella gets captured by not James and not Edward has to save her.
Ah, wow. What are the odds?
No, but in all seriousness, like if this is your jam, no judgment, like enjoy what you like. I am here for the soundtrack. We get a tiny little taste of it. Miguel is doing the rendition for this trailer. It's Crazy in Love, originally sung by Beyoncé. The last movie had a great soundtrack, had a good song by Ellie Goulding, Love Me Like You Do. We got introduced to The Weeknd's Earned It. So I'm expecting good things from the soundtrack. And Miguel is a nice start. Fun fact for anybody who's not familiar with Miguel, he actually has worked with Beyoncé in the past. He co-wrote the song Rocket, I think. Yeah, Rocket, off of Beyoncé's self-titled album that came out a couple of years ago. So they are no strangers to collaborating together, and it's kind of cool to hear his take on one of her most iconic songs. The trailer actually did really well, too. It surpassed The Force Awakens for the most watched trailer in 24 hours. So there is definitely a huge fan base for this.
There's interest.
Yes, there's sure. definitely yeah. interest. And yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that. I don't know if you even cared to watch this trailer. I know that you have some strong feelings on 50 Shades.
I did not. I don't actually have a lot of feelings about 50 Shades. I think that's the problem. Like, I'm neither, like, angry or excited about it. I'm just like,
it's there.
Whatever.
It's a thing.
Yeah,
there.
It's there. It's a thing that's happening, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things, like, unhypeable. We have, obviously, the types of stories that just naturally attract most readers. You know, like, everything we write about Harry Potter, 50 Shades is another one, anything Twilight used to be. And it sort of, it does make you wonder, like, why do we write about anything else? Like, we could get all our page views just from these ones.
That's true.
But then, so that kind of, like, makes me a little bit like, oh, but I guess it's nice because it allows us to write about other stuff too. So that's cool. It's cool. It's a, people are excited about this trailer.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll probably go see it in the, I'll go see it in the movie theaters. I saw the first one. I will say though, that, you know, again, like I said,
isn't it really awkward seeing it in the movie theater?
No, it's actually kind of funny.
Okay.
That's just for me. You know what was really funny? Actually, I'll tell you guys a small little side story here. When I went to see 50 Shades in the theater, they played a trailer for Magic Mike before the movie, which was fine. Like, good,
of course,
good,
that good, makes sense.
Cross advertising there. But the two ladies that were like in front of me were literally judging Magic Mike. They were like, "Oh, like how much raunchier can you get? Like, that's so bold." Like, seriously, 100% judging anybody that would go see this movie. And I said,
"That's
rich." And then they shut up because, like, at the end of the day, you're here to see.
Did you say that to them?
I did. I kind of said it like a lot louder than I would have, like a stage whisper. And then they were like really embarrassed and didn't say anything else for the rest of the movie. Because it's like, you can't judge somebody's taste in whatever. It's like, at the end of the day, it's not hurting anybody. So that's fine.
Exactly.
And I'll go see this in the movie theater. I think it's one of those, like, what do you call it? It's kind of like one of those big, like, pop culture moments.
Yeah.
And I don't like to miss those. I like to be included. So I'll go check this out at some point and I'll report back.
Awesome. We cannot wait for that. So the next story is a little bit of a different genre, but equally exciting, which is A Wrinkle in Time, which is the adaptation of Madeleine Longle, I believe, the author who wrote A Wrinkle in Time, which is a children's book about a girl called Meg Murray who goes on this cross space and time adventure to rescue her father. It's getting an adaptation by Ava DuVernay, and this cast is shaping up to be absolutely stellar. We have Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, and Oprah in the roles of the three celestial beings that help Meg across the universe. And now we know that the main character is going to be played by a girl with the most incredible name of all time, which is Storm Reid. It's just amazing. You already know she's a superstar based on that name. And we actually saw her in 12 Years a Slave. And she's also going to be starring in the American Girl film. She's currently 13 years old, which is the age of Meg. So that kind of fits very, very perfectly. And one of the things that is super exciting, aside from the fact that this is shaping up to be, it's Disney and it's like a huge budget film and it's going to be really awesome, is that this is also the first sort of big budget sci-fi film with a African-American lead character. Like, a child actor that's going to be helming this huge movie with this huge budget. And I think that's just so fantastic, you know. Ava DuVernay sort of made it her mission when she took on this project, that's what this movie was going to be. And I think it's really cool that she's following through with that.
I wanted to know, have you read this book? Because Marima and I were talking about the Mindy and Reese Witherspoon getting attached to this last week, and we had not read it. It's one of those books that evaded us in childhood. So I wanted to know if you had actually read the book when you were younger.
I haven't read it. Okay, no, interesting. But maybe we should. Maybe that should be a book club.
Well, that's what we were talking about. We were like, maybe we should read this, and then we can all read Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah, that's clearly like something
back,
we're missing.
Go back to childhood.
Yes.
I'm interested to see what happens with this. I'm a huge fan of Ava DuVernay, so I think anything that she does, I'll automatically be interested in checking out. But the cast is great, so.
The cast is great. This is going to be a really cool film. It feels like it's going to be like a little bit in the style of Hugo. And hopefully it's going to do better than the BFG, which was Disney's live action children's book adaptation of this summer that didn't do amazingly well, unfortunately. We'll be keeping up with this as we learn more. And maybe we'll, if any listeners have actually read A Wrinkle in Time, please let us know, and let us know if we should read it. We'll do a live reading on Hype.
That's the important part. Let us know if it's worth it.
Yeah, pretty much. We have a lot to read, you guys, and watch and listen to and do. But this next movie is sort of also going to be worth our time, I think, for different reasons.
Right. Well, we have been privy to many of Stanley's creations over the course of the years, and now we're going to get a slice of his story, maybe. Fox is currently in the midst of developing a movie based on Stanley's life, and of course, if you don't know who he is the former president and chairman of Marvel Comics, and he's also the guy you see in all the cameos that come out after all the Marvel movies hit theaters, so definitely seems to be having fun now that he's in his later years in life. But in this movie, we'll get to see kind of like how he picked himself up by his bootstraps and went on to achieve his version of the American dream. So it seems like it's going to be a very much a rags to riches type story. It is being helmed by Marty Bowen and Wick Godfrey, two of the names behind such movies like The Twilight Saga and the Maze Runner series. So that's kind of interesting. There's no writers, directors, or actors attached to the project just yet, but it's definitely going to be interesting to follow this along as they continue on their journey to trying to make this film. And keep up with news on Hypeable to see if we have any more about this. Are you interested in this? Like, would you be down to see a story about Stanley's life?
I mean, I would. I think what's so interesting about this is that it's being developed by Fox. You know, and I know they have the X-Men movies and stuff, but it's still sort of interesting that it's not actually being done by Marvel or Disney or anything like that. But no, I guess so. I mean, I'm not, as a not a comic book fan, I don't have a particular attachment to Stan Lee, but I think the things we've heard about this movie so far sound really interesting. Like, they're maybe going to turn it into like an actual like action movie.
Oh, how funny would that be if like, did you ever see that movie Dangerous Lives of Altar Boys with a very young Emile Hirsch and Kieran Culkin, I think. One of the Culkins, Rory Culkin, Kieran Culkin. Well, as the story progresses, it's a coming of age movie. And if you have not seen it, I highly recommend it. They kind of pepper it with comic book sequences because all of the boys like draw this joint comic book and they all have their own alter egos.
Oh, cool.
So it would be kind of interesting if they did something like
really
that for
cool,
Stanley.
Yeah. Or like something like Scott Pilgrim. That might be really funny
too.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much they could do with this. Like if it's a straight up biopic, I might be like, I might watch it, but I won't be like, oh my God. But if they do something super fun with it, which I think, like,
are you alive?
Surprise, drop the microphone. I'm fine. But no, if they do something like super fun like that with it, then I definitely would check it out. And I feel like Stan Lee has earned it. And I hope he has a cameo in his own movie. I mean, he for sure he's gone.
How funny. Stan Lee meets Stan Lee.
Yes. So that's going to be really fun. And the next story is somewhat smaller, mainly because it's a unknown that we're talking about here. It is Pacific Rim 2, which has found its female lead to act opposite John Boyega. And the role, according to Variety, has gone to Kaylee Spaney, which isn't a name you probably heard before because she's brand new to the scene. She's a pop singer. She's a very unknown actress. She's been in a couple of indie films, including Counting to 1,000. And she will next be seen in the film Shoes, which, first of all, why has no one named a film Shoes before? That's like fantastic. I think she will be selling the shoes in this movie, so very exciting. She's unknown. There's nothing really to report here except that it's great to see, you know, that this movie, Pacific Rim 2, is taking shape and is going ahead. I'm pretty sure it's the next John Boyega project after his untitled Catherine Bigelow movie about the Detroit riots. And one thing that I wanted to note, and this is very interesting, and I don't know if you keep up with John Boyega's career quite as obsessively as I do.
I mean, who doesn't?
Well, yeah, that's true. Makes me feel a little bit better. But it's actually funny that John Boyega tends to be cast opposite the same type of girl. Like, if you've seen Attack the Block from like his breakout movie, that's Jodie Whittaker he's playing opposite. Then you've got Star Wars with Daisy Ridley. Those two, I already thought they looked really similar. And now we have this third girl, Kaylee Spaney, who pretty much looks like them. Like, I think it's really interesting that this keeps happening. It's probably just a coincidence, but I don't know. It's weird.
It is, though. I can see that, actually. I didn't really pay very much attention to her face, but now that you point that out, that is intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah, like this type of brunette girl that looks like has a similar face. Like, it's very weird.
Well, he also just finished filming, Ava DuVernay's untitled Detroit project.
That was Catherine Bigelow.
Oh, sorry, Catherine Bigelow. I'm just thinking about Ava DuVernay.
It's all Ava.
It's all Ava, all chibi. That's right. Catherine Bigelow's untitled Detroit project. So it'll be interesting to see if this trend that you've spotted carries on over there, but considering the subject matter of that, probably not.
So. Well, actually, hold on a second. I'm going to look it up because I actually did report on this and I wrote up who else. John Krasinski.
Oh, perfect. Not quite the same. He's the girl.
He kind of looks like
Daisy Ridley. Yeah, exactly.
What's it? There was also Anthony Mackie is in it, Will Poulter, Ben O'Toole, Jack Renner, Jason Mitchell, Caitlin Dever, and Hannah Murray. So those are the only
Hannah
two
Murray
girls
is the only
the
name that I recognize, like aside from like the bigger names. But
oh, there you go, Caitlin Dever. She looks.
Oh,
like
does she?
One. Yep, she does.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Oh my god.
Maybe it's in his contract.
I think I uncovered some kind of conspiracy here. I'm not sure what to make of it, but stay tuned, everyone. Oh, we're going to follow this closely.
That's amazing.
This is a hype investigation that's just it's just starting.
This is what's going to win us the Pulitzer Prize. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right.
For investigative reporting.
It's going to be super interesting. And if you're looking for a transition, you might consider, speaking of brunette women.
Oh, yes. Well, everybody's favorite female awesome girl from like Lost, you know. I'm gonna start that over. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. I was trying to make a seamless transition. It did not work. Everybody loves Evangeline Lilly. She's been in Lost, she's been in Lord of the Rings. Now we're gonna see her starring opposite Adam Scott, who is also equally beloved. They're set to join Netflix's upcoming project Little Evil, and this is gonna be maybe your new favorite Antichrist show. We're not sure yet. Jury's still out.
Can you guess why I gave you this story, Pam?
As soon as I read up on it, I knew exactly why you gave me this story. Yeah. But let's get to the subject matter at hand, shall we? Basically, these two are starring opposite each other. They get married, and then Gary, who is played by Adam Scott, realizes that Samantha, aka Evangeline Lilly's character, has a 6-year-old son who is the Antichrist. So obviously, stuff happens after that. But other than that, I mean, it looks like it might be really fun. They have a lot of funny names attached to this show, which makes sense because it is a comedy. Donald Faison from Scrubs is in this. Chris D'Elia from Netflix's Undateable is in this. He's hilarious. And, you know, just based on the cast alone, I would tune into this when it comes out. So I'll be interested.
It's just a movie, right? It's not a TV show.
I thought it was a TV show for some reason, but I think you're pretty right. Sure, it is a movie. I was hoping, nice little sitcom.
Yeah.
But
I think it's so cool. Like, I think Karen said it so well on Hypeable when she said it's like a thing we didn't know we wanted, because seeing Evangeline Lilly and Adam Scott next to each other, you're like, of course. Like, of course you want a movie with the two of them. You just never thought that would probably going to be a good fit. I'm also very excited to see Evangeline Lilly in a comedy.
I was just going to say that.
I hope she's not going to be like the straight girl, you know, like the Claire of Modern Family or something, you know?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, because you're right. We constantly see her in more dramatic roles, I guess, or just more serious roles. But I'm sure she is funny. I was actually at a press conference for The Hobbit, which one? Desolation mm-hmm. of Smaug, with she was on the panel at Comic-Con a couple of years ago. And she's really funny in person. Like, she has zingers and stuff. So I don't doubt that she can do comedy. And I think it's great that she's going to get the chance to do that alongside some people that are known for being funny. So mm-hmm. it's going to be fun, I think.
Agreed. Agreed. So continuing to talk about brunette females, we're going to talk about Rogue One. I see how long I can keep this going. There's a big news story if you're into movie soundtracks, which I think everyone on this podcast panel is, and I think everyone listening probably is, because it's a big deal. The Star Wars Rogue One movie actually has a new composer, you know. Production is done, post-production is well underway, but they've actually swapped out Alexander Desplat with Michael Giacchino, which is interesting for several reasons. In the news story from The Hollywood Reporter, where we got this information, they said that this change was made due to the reshoots that I don't believe Hypeable covered, because we were, or maybe we did, but we were kind of like, reshoots happen on all movies. We don't want to like suggest that this movie's in trouble, but it does seem like the reshoots were significant enough that they wanted to bring in a new composer. But it also has something to do with Desplat's schedule, because due to the reshoots, everything got pushed back. And it's also possible that it was simply a scheduling conflict that led to this change of composer. What it's left us with is Michael Giacchino. Obviously, I also could have said, speaking of Lost, because of course, Michael Giacchino's, one of his most famous projects was the soundtrack for Lost, which was one of the first TV shows to have a orchestral composed score, which is wonderful and one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. And Michael Giacchino, of course, this movie is not directed by J.J. Abrams, but J.J. Abrams directed The Force Awakens. Michael Giacchino has worked with J.J. Abrams on multiple projects, and they both came over to Star Wars from Star Trek, which is another interesting facet of this. And I think, you know, if people are worried that Rogue One is going to sound like Star Trek, you know, ask yourself if The Force Awakens feels like a Star Trek movie, because if it doesn't, then I think you're okay. Like, these people know how to, you know, change from one star to another, so to speak. So I'm wondering what you feel about this, Pam, if you have any opinions about these. Like, I really like Alexander Desplat, and he actually did I got to interview him last year for Suffragette. And I, like, when I was interviewing him, I wanted to ask him about Star Wars, and I chickened out. And now I'm glad I didn't, because I would have been would have been awkward. But I love Michael Giacchino. He also did the score for Alias, you know, which is another favorite score. I'm actually very excited to see what he's going to bring to this.
Yeah, I think it's definitely bittersweet. I'm a huge fan of Desplat as well. When I was interning out in LA, the first couple of years I was there, I went to this wonderful event, and I'm so, so happy that I was able to go. Desplat was there, and he basically played a medley of all of his biggest, biggest scores. And he was actually there to promote Philomena at the time. So this was back in 2014. But it was just so lovely to hear him play in person. And he is such a nice guy. I interviewed him a bit after, but of course, like, Star Wars wasn't out yet. I did tell him that I loved his work on Harry Potter, which was, you know, obviously that's mm-hmm. very near and dear mm-hmm. to our hearts. But he's wonderful. And I'm a huge fan of him as a composer. Michael Giacchino, it's just, they're different, but he's equally as good. So it's kind of sad that we don't get Desplat, but as far as replacements go, like, you can't really complain because, mm-hmm. you know.
Agreed.
Yeah. So.
And I will actually say, like, speaking of Harry Potter, like, I am a huge fan of Despot, like, genuinely. And I think that his Suffragette soundtrack was amazing, which is, like, the most recent thing that I remember hearing him in. But I do think that in Harry Potter, like, I wasn't a fan of the soundtracks that he did for the last couple of Harry Potter films. I thought he reused too much of previous scores, and I thought it didn't feel like it captured the mood of the scenes and stuff. And being such a huge fan of Michael Giacchino as I am, like, I am sort of, like, when I feel, like, inside myself, I'm, like, more comfortable with this choice.
Yeah.
But that's not to criticize or anything like that. It's just when you said Harry Potter, I sort of had this feeling of, like, oh, actually, I was a little bit dissatisfied with that.
And, you know, I think that that's a good point to bring up, because the thing with Desplat is that he's very rooted in tradition. So if he jumps in on something like Harry Potter, it's like he wants to pay tribute to what has come before. And considering that he was handed the last two movies, I could see why he would want to do something like that. And I think he flourishes more when he's got a blank slate, because you can really see.
Yes,
like
for
the
sure.
mastermind yeah. behind the composer, and it's not to say that he's like scared to take like leaps or like, you know, plunge away from something that already has, you know, a deep-seated history of scores, but I just think it's mm-hmm. his way of honoring the past, because he is very
for
traditional
sure.
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, for sure.
So you're right. I think that, like, you know, attaching him to something like Star Wars, like, you do run the risk of, like, maybe having him do that as his way of tipping the hat to, say, like, John Williams and stuff like that. And Giacchino mm-hmm. might not do that. It's kind of one of those things where we'll never know unless, you know, hopefully somebody asks him if he had thought about the score and if he, like, mm-hmm. you know, thought mm-hmm. about how much he was going to incorporate from past scores into, like, newer right. stuff. But it is an interesting point to make.
It is, and not to harp on too much about it, but I remember, because I think it's also because I listened to the Harry Potter soundtrack so much, and especially 5 by Nicholas Hooper. I loved that one, or Hopper. It was Hooper.
That's my favorite, too.
It's my favorite, and I just remember, like, watching one of the final films and hearing Umbridge's theme for some completely different thing. And I was like, you can't do that, that's for the... You know, that's our movie. So I just sort of got really sort of weird about that. But anyway, I'm sorry. That's like a total tangent, but I thought it was interesting. That's all I had about that.
All right. Well, there's no way to transfer over to brunettes for this next story. But I'm not sure if you have read Sarah J. Maas's Throne of Glass books. I feel like you would like them if you did. But I know
But they've actually been recommended yes. to me by several readers of Hypeable.
Because they are right up your alley. I'm just going to put that out there. So for those of you that don't know, Sarah J. Maas's books center around a female assassin. She's summoned to a castle, and she's not there to kill the king, but she is there to try and win her freedom back. And so in order to do this, she needs to defeat 23 killers, thieves, warriors, and warriors in a competition. And if she does that, she'll be released from prison, and she'll be able to serve as the king's champion. So very much... like girl power type thing.
Oh, wow.
She is like there to
is
save
her
herself.
Name, is her name
Selena?
Selena?
It is.
Is that what
yes,
that spells?
This is your new spirit everything.
Oh my god, so it's C-E-L-A-E-N-A.
Yeah,
Selena. Mm-hmm. That's I've never seen that before.
I have
that
not
is
either.
Impressive.
This book series has gotten so much hype, and Maas just released the 5th book in the series, Empire of Storms. She's clearly having a big year, because Hulu is actually currently in the process of creating a television adaptation of her Throne of Glass series. So this pilot is going to be written by Kyra Snyder, who's best known for The 100.
It's all coming together.
Yes.
It's all spelling Selena.
And Anna Forrester, who has directed a couple of episodes of Outlander and is also one of the people behind this year's Underworld, Blood Wars. Is that
Selena?
Yes.
Again?
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God.
She is going to be directing the pilot for Hulu. So Great time to be a Throne of Glass fan if you are one.
Great time to be a Selena.
Yeah, great time to be a Selena. My best friend is a huge fan of this series. Admittedly, I have not read it either because I have to be in the mood to read high fantasy. But I did call her last night and I wanted to know like her thoughts as a big fan. And of course, she's super excited. She says that the only thing that she's a little bit worried about is that these books are very, very, very high fantasy. And she says she has not seen the Shannara Chronicles, but she says that you would probably be thinking something along those lines, where it's like a completely made up world. A lot of this, you know, rides on the details. She says that she's not sure how she's going to pull it off, but she's going to be really interested to see how it goes. And so that's like her one big qualm is that they are taking on a monster of a series. And, wow. But she's really excited to see what Hulu does with it.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool. Well, I'm excited. I hope this doesn't go the way of the selection.
I know. But I think just like talking to her about it and hearing just how much like goes into all these books, because they are very much like tomes. They're not like necessarily just books, but they're tomes.
Interesting.
It is nice to see that it's going to be getting a full series and not necessarily like a movie. I think sometimes movies, you have to cut the details more than a TV show, which could essentially go on for longer.
For sure.
It sounds like a really good format. Which is why I
tend to prefer TV.
Yeah, awesome. Exactly.
Okay, cool. So staying in the realm of TV, we have a couple of brief updates on the new Star Wars and Star Trek TV series that are both coming, but they're both coming later than we would have liked. So the Star Trek Discovery series that was supposed to hit CBS All Access will have to wait until at least May 2017. It was originally slated for January 7, 2017, so it's not a huge wait, but it is a couple of months. So this has a lot to do with Brian Fuller's commitment to American Gods over on Stars. And so Discovery, which is sort of set to sort of, you know, take the Star Trek franchise in a whole new direction and add a lot of diversity and all that kind of good stuff, they're choosing to delay it to make sure that it's not rushed, which I think is an incredible decision. And they issued a very moving statement that includes, you know, we aim to dream big and deliver. And that means making sure the demands of physical and post-production for a show that takes place entirely in space don't result in compromised quality. So sad news, but good news. I will say that I would, you know, like Brittany writes in her article, better late than wrong. And you can read more about that on Hypeable. And the other one is the Star Wars TV show, that the live action TV show, because of course there's already a cartoon, which according to ABC TV's Ben Sherwood is a possibility. He says, somewhere we hope in a galaxy not too far away, there will be a television show that will air on one of our networks, but it's still a long way off if it ever comes, partly because Disney and Lucasfilm's slate is so full of all the movies that they're making, which is, of course, both the main trilogy and the anthology, or whatever you want to call them, like universe movies. Whoops, I just dropped something. I'm sorry. but they are in ongoing conversations, and there will be another animated show aside from Rebels too. So there's a lot of stuff coming, and we will hope that one day we'll see a live action TV show. So are you excited about any of these? Like, are you excited for the Star Trek one that is for sure happening?
I'm not the biggest Star Trek fan. Admittedly, I know a little bit about the series. I catch some episodes from time to time, but I don't have as much of an emotional tie to Star Trek as I do to something like Star Wars. So I'll check it out because I feel like I'm just a fan of anything that has a labor of love behind it. And it sounds like this very much does. So I'll check it out purely based on that principle. But I would be much more interested in like the potential of a Star Wars live action television series.
I think I am too. But I'm intrigued by the Star Trek TV series. I feel like for someone like me who's not into the world at all, maybe this one will actually be a good like entry point.
Right. I totally agree with that because, like I said, that would be basically like what it would be for me. Like just because I don't know very much about it, and
for sure.
Well, moving on, there is no way to transition to this last story, but as you guys know, if we have music news, we like to tack it in on the end for you guys. Lady Gaga's album is coming, and it's coming very, very soon. Her fifth studio album is set to drop on October 21st, and we finally know that it will be titled Joanne. And if you're wondering about the significance behind the name of her album, hardcore Gaga fans will know already, but for those of you that don't, it's actually based off of her... sorry, I lost my place here. You can cut this out. Oh my gosh, where is it? I was just reading about this. Oh, here we go. Cut all this out, Selena. Okay. So if you're wondering about the significance behind the name of the album, it's actually a reference to her late aunt, and it's also Lady Gaga's middle name. She has talked in the past about how she has felt like she's the reincarnation of her aunt Joanne, so this is a really nice way for her to pay tribute to it. And according to just what she had to say about the album on Beats One earlier this week, she did also hint that the album would include a lot of little extras, like personal extras, like clippings from her aunt, and also her father, and like photographs and letters and things like that. So it really sounds like she's putting a lot of personal stuff into this new forthcoming album. I'm particularly excited for this because she has also said that she's going to have a lot of collaborations on this as well. I know that she has been working with Elton John on this. She's been working with Mark Ronson, who helped her create Perfect Illusion, which is her latest single. And the one that I'm most interested for is her duet with Florence and the Machine's Florence Welch. They're going to be singing together on a song called Hey Girl. And in another interview with BBC One, Gaga said that she knew that she needed a girl for this track, and she was so excited that Florence was down to be a part of it, because in her words, Florence has one of the best, if not the best, vocals in the world. So lots of high praise coming from Gaga for Florence, and it's going to be really fun to hear kind of these two powerhouse vocalists combine on one track. So that's definitely the song I'm probably most excited for right now.
Awesome.
And also, Gaga seems to be gearing up to have a big year, because she's also the newest artist who is rumored to potentially be part of Super Bowl's halftime show this year. Of course, we talked about Adele possibly being in the running, and she kind of like put those rumors to rest. So currently Gaga's in talks to helm Super Bowl. She did sing the national anthem last year, and I think that, you know, with the new album coming out, it would definitely make sense for her to take the stage and sing some of her new tracks and some of her old tracks. So we'll keep you guys posted on whether or not this goes down, but definitely a good choice, and I think many would agree probably a better choice than Adele, because she is more lively.
I was gonna say like, it definitely, Lady Gaga doing the Super Bowl is makes so much sense. And I was reading this going like, I've thought she'd done it before, like she's the kind of artist that I would assume had already done it, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because she's legitimately good live too, you know, like she legitimately has an amazing voice. So I think that if this happens, it would be amazing. And as much as I would love to see Adele singing "Hello from the Super Bowl," I don't think that would happen anyway. So this is better for sure. This brings us to the end of the news, and before we move on, I just wanted to give a shout out, a very special shout out, to a couple of articles on Hypeable actually brought to you by Merima, our wayward host who pops up every once in a while. And she did an interview with Rainbow Rowell, and she has really gotten some great stuff out of her, including news on a possible Carry On sequel that Rainbow Rowell says she wants to write. And there's some great interviews up on hyperbole.com. So we just wanted to point your attention in that direction, and we'll try to remember to link you from the Hype podcast Twitter as well, because we definitely think those are worth reading. Merima did a great job, and it's a really big interview, and it's really popular on social media and stuff. So well done, Merima. You know, golf claps for the team. Woo! So moving on now to TV show of the week. Me and Pam both have some exciting... Yes, guys. I have seen a TV show this week. I know. I'm shocked too. But fall season is approaching, and I didn't get to be on the fall TV special, so I did want to make sure that I caught up. But I'm going to let Pam go first, because this is one of the shows that I'm most excited about on the upcoming season, but I haven't had a chance to watch the pilot yet.
Oh my gosh, you guys, Pitch is finally coming. I'm so excited for everybody to see it. The show premieres on Fox this Thursday, September 22nd, and you're definitely going to want to tune in. It's like, the pilot is literally everything I could have hoped for and more, and that is like high praise for me, because I'm a huge baseball fan. And let me just tell you that, like, if you're a fan of baseball, you're totally going to geek out, because they've done so much to make sure that this is authentic as possible. If you're a fan of sports. No, just baseball, because, you know, I was watching this, and I hooked up my computer onto like our bigger screen and stuff so I could like enjoy it in full. And my brother walks in and he's like, "Why are you watching the Padres?" Because, you know, the Padres Giants, like, you know. Wow. Yeah, he's like, "What the heck?" I was like, no, it's a TV show. So everything from just like trying to immerse you in this world to just Ginny as a character is just so lovely and wonderful, and I'm so excited to see where it goes from here. The pilot totally made me tear up a couple times. I got really emotional, and I did not expect it, and it's just great. It is definitely like my number one pick for like new favorite TV show, and I'm really hoping that it keeps its momentum up.
Oh my god, that's so cool. Like, I know there was a screener at one point and I didn't have a chance to see it, and Pitch is for sure one of the shows that I'm most excited about. So I'm so glad to hear that that you enjoyed it. As for me, like, there are, again, I missed the TV show special, so I'm doing my small one right now. There are three shows. Well, actually, there are four shows. There are four shows for this upcoming fall season that I am super excited about and that I'm for sure going to check out. And one of them is Pitch. Another one is Issa Rae's Awkward on HBO, because I watched, or it's not called Awkward, it's called Insecure, because her web series is called Awkward Black Girl, and I watched it and I thought it was amazing and hilarious, and I love Issa Rae and have followed her ever since, so I'm very excited to see that when it premieres. And of course, Westworld, which I wrote about on Hypeable and compared to Dollhouse and Battlestar Galactica in its treatment of AI intelligence and morality debates, and nobody cared, but I thought it was a I thought it was a good article. But that's not out yet. And then the final one is Queen Sugar, bringing it back to Ava DuVernay. And we had a comment. We had one of our tweets from listener Bobby, who asked, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Queen Sugar on the next episode. And I'm assuming he was talking about the fall special, but I'm going to give my thoughts on it right now, because I actually watched the pilot before we started the show. Like, I didn't really have time, but I wanted to make sure that I got my thoughts in. Have you seen this show, Pam?
I have. We actually caught Bobby's comment just in time for the TV special. Cool. So I'm not sure if he meant he wanted us to discuss it on that or if he wanted to discuss it on here. But Brittany had seen it, and after reading his tweet and listening to what Brittany had to say, I watched it as well. And I think it's like, it's so beautifully shot, first of all. But it's a really intriguing story. And I love the idea of, like, you know, like a strange family having to come back together and, like, you know, figure things out and stuff like that. I always kind of feel like those kind of like windows into people's like lives and stuff like that are interesting, because I'm so often caught up in fantasy. Does that make sense?
So, oh yeah, for sure. So I watched the pilot, and I feel like really bad about like speaking just from the pilot, because that obviously sets up what the show is going to be from here on out. So it sort of almost feels unfair to talk about just the pilot, but it's all good things that I have to say. So I think it's going to be okay. Like, I think I feel the same as you, Pam, in that the window into people's lives was, it's so affecting and what's the word? Like, it's such a good use of that style of TV show, because like, after I watched the pilot, first of all, it's an extremely moving story that they tell in the pilot. And yes, I did cry. I was watching it in the living room, and like, I had it just on my laptop and I had my earphones in, and people were like doing other stuff. And then suddenly I was like just crying in the corner like an idiot. But it was very affecting. It was very emotional. And ever since watching the pilot, I've been like I've been like thinking about these people and thinking about their stories and what makes them who they are and what they're feeling, like even though they're obviously not real. And I just think that speaks to the level of good drama. And I mean, it's Ava DuVernay. She knows her stuff, you know, she's obviously going to make a good TV show, but I was honestly taken aback by how affecting it was. And it's just, it's a really intriguing set of characters. And I'm particularly interested in, I don't know their names yet, but the first girl we saw, the herbalist, I'm particularly like intrigued by her character and what she's going to do in the show. And Bianca Lawson popped up for a second, which was cool. And it just, it's about like, if you don't know anything about this, it's about a family that comes together and have to work together, like after being estranged from each other. And there's a basketball wife and a herbalist and a man who's been released from prison and has a young son. And it's kind of like this coming together of the family. And, I thought it was very beautiful. And I thought it was like, it left me just really wanting to watch more, which doesn't actually always happen with pilots for me. Like I have to watch, like at least I have to force myself to keep watching until I care about these characters. But this, I just cared about the characters straight away. And I thought that was really spectacular. So very intrigued with Queen Sugar, and I can't wait to have time to watch more of it. So I guess that's everything for TV show of the week. But shifting gears a little bit, I think this is a good time to kick in our little bonus segment.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited!
Bonus TV show of the week. I should have teased this at the beginning. Actually, maybe I'll add in. No, I won't do that. But so obviously, it's been a couple of weeks. But last listeners may remember last time me and Pam were on a show together, just us. Obviously, the conversation derailed into Merlin territories. It always does because we were talking about the new procedural Camelots, which is King Arthur in New York, which is just the stupidest thing. So we decided that we were going to make up our own pitch for a better Merlin Arthur reincarnation TV show. And I don't think Pam has done it, but I have done it because I'm a dork. So I actually sat down and I made something up. And I think it's pretty genius, if I say so myself.
I want to hear it.
Are you ready, Pam?
I'm so ready. Yeah. My body has been
ready. I'm going to read it for you right now. So this show is called Merthyr, She Wrote. It's a mystery drama by the sea. So here's my pitch. Having given up hope that King Arthur will ever return, an old and disillusioned Merlin travels to a small seaside town, hoping to settle down and live a quiet life. Little does he know that destiny has other plans. A string of mysterious disappearances leads Merlin to suspect that mysterious forces are once more afoot, and when he pays a visit to the local police department, he finds more than one familiar face he never expected to see again. Now Merlin must reopen a case file he thought had been closed forever. His heart. That's it.
Oh my gosh. That last line is the kicker.
Right. That's what's really going to hook people.
There you go. It's perfect. Camelot, you've got some big shoes to fill. I'm just going to put that out there.
I'm pretty sure we know which one is the better pitch out of these two.
I mean, you've definitely got the better title.
Right? So there you go. Coming to TV Never, but I'm sure the fanfic equivalent is out there somewhere. So that's everything for TV show of the week. We hope you enjoyed that. Next week, Pam, I expect you to follow that up with a Merlin pitch of your own.
Oh, no. Okay. I'll work on it this week.
Okay, great. So we're going to wrap up the show today with listener feedback. Well, we have some really great, we actually have a lot of listener feedback today, because I figured we were going to be really quick talking about the news. And of course we were not, I should have known better, but we'll see how much of this we get through. So we are going to start with some comments from hypeable.com. And, I'm going to take the first one by Jesse, and then I'll let you take the slightly longer one. So Jesse says, just an FYI, white boys named Tyler who play werewolves, Tyler Posey is half Mexican. But as for Tyler Hoechlin from Teen Wolf, you're right on the money. I don't know what this is. I guess this was your discussion last week.
Why were we talking about werewolves? I can't remember why we were talking about werewolves, but Marima said, white boys named Tyler. Oh, because of the Vampire Diaries. Because I talked about how Tyler Lockwood's coming back to Mystic Falls for the final season, and she thought that the actor's name is Tyler Lockwood. It's not. It's Michael Trevino. Oh. And she said, oh, that would have gone with the trend of white boys named Tyler playing werewolves. But little do we know that Tyler Posey is half Mexican. And after we got this comment, I actually looked it up, and I thought, I didn't know. He's from Zacatecas, which is a region that part of my family is from as well, although not like the region where we prevail most. But yeah, it's a fun little fact. I had no idea. So now I know.
Huh. Thanks for clearing that up for us.
So we also have a comment here from Laura who says, I liked this episode and I hope you do another one for spring. I already knew I was going to be checking out This Is Us, Westworld, and Gilmore Girls, but a few of the others you guys talked about intrigued me, such as Divorce, Clean Sugar, and Dirk Gently. I will definitely have to check them out. Also, I didn't have any issues with the audio, but...
Oh, you don't have to read that. I'm sorry, I forgot to put that up. Sorry.
Okay.
Does not have words.
My bad. Okay. Well, yeah. So this is, I guess this is in reference to our fall TV special, and we're really glad that you liked it and that you found some new shows to hopefully fall in love with. We'll be right there with you. We haven't watched a lot of these yet either, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have some emails as well, and we actually have a couple about Cursed Child, and there are a few spoilers in them, so we're going to save them for the very end. So if you don't want them, you can turn off before you get spoiled, obviously. So we're just going to read some tweets first, and then we're going to get back to the emails and save that for the very end. So Amy Licht on Twitter says, I love the episode. Definitely some new shows. This is, again, referring to the TV special. Definitely some new shows to add to my radar. One for January is a great idea. You can just keep going.
Okay. And then Laura said, so many things to watch, Stranger Things, etc., but I am on epic rewatch of Gymnastics. I'm assuming she means like Olympics, but at least I know what I'm watching next.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Rachel McCarthy says, yay, been missing my native accent. And this is in reference to Marima being back last week. And we really hope that she'll be available to hop on soon because we definitely missed her. And it was nice to have her back.
Sure. But Rachel, if you're a Gilmore Girls fan, Marima will pop up again later this week when our Gilmore Girls Season 5 special goes live. Da da da! We already recorded it. We're just holding it for the middle of the week. So get excited about that and Marima's accent. And our final tweet comes from Shauna Evans, who asks, how did Gishwish go? You guys never gave an update and I was curious. So Pam, how did Gishwish go?
Well, I will
I didn't think we won.
I don't know. I will say that, like, well, first of all, I think that I would have loved to have done Gishwish when everything was not going crazy. I think we underestimated how busy we were going to be that week, unfortunately, with Comic-Con and like all this stuff going on for us.
And I was moving house
and Selena was moving house and stuff like that. So unfortunately, Selena and I didn't get to participate as much as we wanted to. I did get to do a few things. Like, I made this handmade card for this little boy and mailed it off. And we both participated in like where we're from type portraits. Maybe we'll toss that up on the Hype Instagram just so you guys can get a feel for the kind of stuff that we got up to. But I will say that, like, the people that signed up to join Team Hypeable were phenomenal, and they all got into the spirit of things, and it was just really inspiring to see everybody coming together and organizing and stuff like that. And then we kind of popped in from time to time to help out with this and that. But definitely all of the credit goes to our team, who was amazing.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It was a fun experience. I think this was always supposed to just be like a fun like trial. So we really thank everyone who sort of went along for the ride. And I think we're sort of more prepared, hopefully, to do it next year if we decide to do it next year. And should be a lot of fun. It definitely is a lot of fun to do Gish Wish. I can highly recommend. So now we're going to finish with the emails. Before we go, we're just going to wrap up quickly. So remember, if you want to leave us any feedback, you can do that on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. You can email us, hype@hypable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypablehype, and you can find us on Instagram at hypablehype, and you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. So if you are leaving us before our cursed child stuff, then goodbye. And if not, then stick around. It's not huge spoilers. It's just like I don't want to upset
basically
anyone,
you so, have been warned, so proceed at your own risk.
Yeah, proceed at your own risk. And if you know, most of you guys have probably read it now, so it doesn't matter, but I just wanted to make sure. So before we do that, though, we do have an email from Mark Noop, who says, "Hello, Hype. I recently started listening to your podcast. I love it and will go back to older episodes." Yay! I wanted to tell you about how I hype at the moment. It is the Dutch TV series Adam Eva. In my opinion, it is one of the best TV series ever, not just in the Netherlands. So far, two seasons have aired, a season one in 2011 and season two in 2014. Yes, we had to be very patient. The closing third season will start airing this November. The show's main characters are Adam and Eva. Adam moves to Amsterdam and meets his neighbor Eva. The two fall in love and we follow them through their life together. It sounds simple, but it's so much more than that, because in every episode we also see the lives of other inhabitants of Amsterdam and how they cross paths with our main cast. The writers have done a brilliant job with this. And then there's the city itself, because we get to jump into so many different characters' lives. We get to see so many different aspects of Amsterdam. The city is a character itself. He links to a trailer that we're going to put up on Hype so everyone can check it out and sort of take a spiritual journey to Amsterdam. In case people are interested, the season one and season two DVDs have English and Spanish subtitles. This is really cool. I think shows like this are sort of great for curing like wanderlust. You know, like if you have a travel blog and you can't leave, then definitely something that paints such a beautiful picture of somewhere like Amsterdam's really cool. And we really appreciate Mark sort of bringing this to our attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
This is very cool.
I agree. Like, one of my favorite books does that. It's A Movable Feast by Ernest Hemingway. It's set in Paris, and Paris very much is a character in the story, and it's lovely. But yeah, thanks for that. I love it when our listeners, like, let us know what they've been enjoying and stuff, because it's a great way for us to, like, discover new things, too.
Yeah. And I would like to ask Mark, by the way, if you can clear this up for me, because when you're Danish and like making your way through the world, people always think that you speak Dutch. So I'm just wondering if you have like the opposite problem. So you tell people that you're Dutch and they're like, oh, do you speak Danish? Or if it's only the other way around. So you can let us know. Because I'm curious. So now we're going to talk about two emails we got for Cursed Child. And the first one is actually like really interesting, and it's from Marie-Lisa Majdik, and it's a little bit long, so I'm going to give it to Pam.
Okay. So Marie says, "Hey Hypes, I saw Cursed Child on Saturday with five other people who love Harry Potter, and we all had different reactions, but overall we agreed that Scorbus was blatantly obvious. Personally, I liked the play. It had flaws, and I took notes after each act to remember everything I felt was kind of unrealistic / out of character, but the effects on stage that and the feel of the acting really made it for me. I avoided all spoilers and didn't read the script before seeing it, so there were a few big surprises for me. I'm a Slytherin and really wanted Albus to be one, and for Draco to be involved in the story with the trio, so I guess in a way that was perfect for me. Although I figured they were going with Rose Scorpius because of the little hints, I think Scorbus made more sense. Or even just leaving explicit romantic intentions out of it altogether. Still, there is always fan fiction, I suppose." Yeah, I think you're right on the money, Marie. We're right there with you. Mm-hmm. Okay, now about the line change. And Marie actually tweeted us about this, so I'm really glad that she wrote in. So she says there was a line change because the HP series and especially JKR has been criticized for its lack of LGBT characters that weren't revealed post-mortem and post-books. This really caught my attention. In the scene where Scorpius and Albus are telling Myrtle about wanting to rescue Cedric, she says in the script, "Such a shame the pretty one had to die. You'd be amazed at how many girls I had to hear doing love incantations in this very bathroom and the weeping after he was taken." So then she says, "Now in the final stage version I saw, which it was changed to, you'd be amazed at how many girls and boys I had to hear." It really surprised me that this was a change from the script. I downloaded the ebook after seeing the play to look some things up for my notes and stumbled upon the change. Now, I wonder if they changed the line to get a bit more representation in there. After all, the Scorpius reactions, maybe? If they did, I think that's a rather poor showing. A throwaway line doesn't make for proper representation. I'd rather they have cut out Scorpius asking Rose out at the end and left Scorpius ambiguous than throw us this line. Now, I haven't read the whole script, so there might be more changes, but I just wanted to say that overall I had a good experience. I went to the stage door after both parts and got a picture with the actor playing Ron after part one and lots of autographs after part two. The actors are just the nicest people, and everyone asked how we had liked the play and was very generous with their time. I'm not sure what role Cursed Child will play in my personal canon going forward, but I don't regret going to see it. Keep up the good work, and I look forward to listening again now that I can't be spoiled anymore. Best wishes, Marie. And then she left her Twitter handle for us, which is illram06.
Mm-hmm. This is so interesting, Marie. Like, I'm so glad that you shared this with us.
I totally agree. That's crazy.
And actually, it's funny because I've been thinking a lot about this, and I was writing to Andrew to see if maybe we could do something, like write something up on Hyperbole. So if any other listeners like have also been to see the play, like, and could tell us, because I'm wondering if this maybe like was a one-time thing, or if it kind of, like, it'll be interesting to see when the final version of the script comes out, because obviously that will reflect any line changes like this one. My crackpot theory is that the actress who plays Myrtle is secretly a Scorpius shipper, and she was like doing whatever she could. But what is so cool about, or interesting about this too, is that it sort of really reminds me of J.K. Rowling saying on Twitter at one point, like, when someone asked why there weren't any like LGBT people at Hogwarts, and she said, like, of course there are LGBT people at Hogwarts, and people got really excited about it. And all I could think was, okay, but why are they invisible?
Well, and it's always been kind of like sort of a throwaway. That. Like, the mm-hmm. idea. It is kind of, yeah, like, yeah, it's always mm-hmm. been like that. Even with, like everybody got excited about Dumbledore being gay, but, like, the truth of the matter is that she didn't really out him until he died, and it was an offhanded compliment. Mm-hmm. Like, we never saw it.
It was
the books.
A throw. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It was a sort of like a. I don't even know how to describe it, but I think throwaway is probably a really good. Like, you can read the book, and it's not. It's not in the book, like, it's in her words after the fact, and you can go back and infer meaning, but, like, that doesn't, and you can go back and be like, oh, okay, I know there are gay people at Hogwarts, so it must be, like, extra number three. Like, that doesn't, I totally agree with Marie. Like, if this was done to sort of quote-unquote, like, appease the people who criticized it, then it was done in poor taste, and, is definitely not going to appease people that feel a little bit hurt by the exclusion. But it is very interesting that they should, like, even consider doing this as a patch. Or if legitimately it just was, like, a thing that they thought would be fun to throw in there, or if it's even going to be in the final script book, anything like that. But I'm very glad that you brought it up, Marie, because I think it is noteworthy for sure, and I'm surprised that no one else that I've seen have really sort of noted this, you know. We'll keep tabs on this, because I would also be very curious to hear what other listeners might have to say about it. And our final comment comes from Yannick, and it's about Cursed Child as well. And he says, hypes. So he cut the hate, just hypes. Long time no see. How are you all doing? Yannick actually did Gishwish with us, by the way. Still recovering from the Cursed Child, the Cursed Craig? Yes, me too. I just returned from my September 1st showing of the production, and I gotta say, I was pretty impressed. I mean, the whole take on a boy who is pushed to the background after some boy who is named after an old headmaster joins the school and befriends the son of Voldemort was really quite inventive. It was almost like he didn't exist. Talk about spare. The ending especially took me by surprise. I mean, I know JK has always been literal with her titles, but the killing curse, tough luck. Hashtag rip Craig. At least we got to see his grave. That was his grave, right? Till next time, Yannick. yeah, I made this joke too, Yannick, in my hypeable post, whatever. P.S. On a more serious note, I did actually enjoy the production. In fact, this is without a doubt my favorite portrayal of the Wizarding World. The movies have done a lot, yes, but the theater experience, can we talk about those transitions and the way they did the magic made everything so much more down to earth and believable. I hope that the WB, hopefully in collaboration with BBC or Netflix, tries to reboot this as a TV series in a decade or so. They will rely more on the aesthetics of the play, as you can truly tell that everything from the scenery to the costumes and set design was done by people who would, to some degree or another, have grown up with the series and not just thrown together because it became a surprise bestseller. PPS, speaking about costume design, am I the only one furious about the fact that the only apparel they sell are ties and printed t-shirts, thereby preying on the money of desperate fans? I get the logistics of the robes, but come on, where is my privileged Cursed Child Ravenclaw scarf? They had scars when we were there, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, PSSS, I noticed you guys didn't talk about the music on the specials. What did you think? Personally, I was very impressed with Imogen Heap's score. The O's were sometimes a little bit misplaced, especially in one of the latter scenes in part two. Okay, so first of all, the music, I'm pretty sure we covered this in our spoiler-free first podcast, but maybe we didn't. But yeah, Imogen Heap did do the score, and at one point I think they even played the instrumental version of Hide and Seek, which is extremely distracting because you know that song, it's not a Harry Potter thing. But I totally agree actually with Yannick when he says that this setup was the best portrayal of the Wizarding World, and it's something that another reason why I just wish the story had been better, because as I've said countless times before, like, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful production. There's so much love that goes into all the visual stuff that you see, including the acting. It's such a shame, in my opinion, that the story does not hold up to the standards set by the visual thing on stage. And I almost feel like that's the opposite of the movies, because the movies are obviously telling this amazing story from the books, but the depiction of Hogwarts and magic and stuff to me is not up to par with what I expected it to be. So very interesting stuff. Do you have any comments?
Well, I can't really speak to a lot of this last bit because I haven't seen it. And I have not heard the score. But I'm pretty sure also, maybe it was like blink and you'll miss it. But I feel like Kyle brought up the music as well in our our like script special. And I'm actually like, I'm intrigued because I love Imogen Heap. I would love to hear the score. I was kind of hoping that they would have released it by now. They might not, but I think it would be nice.
I don't know what, like, they just don't give a crap about people that can't go see it live. Yeah,
but I really just like, because like releasing a score, so I mean, first of all, it's extra income coming in. And also I just kind of feel like that's the least they can do.
I agree completely.
So those are my thoughts. I'm just still a bitter Betty because I can't listen to the score. And I also can't see the play.
Yeah. It's like every time I talk about how the visuals were so good, like, I feel so bad because...
No, I mean, you know...
It's such an exclusive
thing.
It's
just bittersweet, that's all. I'm so thrilled that at the end of the day, it seems to be a general consensus that the production value is wonderful, and that makes me really happy, albeit the actual plot could use with a bit more work. But it's really comforting to know that it's not just, like, complete crap all around. So it's nice. It is just, like, one of those things where it's like, well, that's nice, but, you know, It sucks. And I can't even really complain very much because I know I have like a better chance of seeing this play than like some other people do. So at the end of the day, there's like really no room for me to complain either, because at some point I'm probably among that general, you know, what do you call it? That general blanket of like the you will see it that Joe keeps promising.
Right, so. Right. Yeah. Which not everyone is going to be. For
exactly.
Sure. Oh, well, on that depressing note, that brings us to the end of Hype.
I know, right?
We just bummed everyone out. Thank you so much to everyone who wrote in, and please keep all the amazing feedback coming. We also just want to remind you that we would appreciate it so much if you listen to the show and if you enjoy it, if you could head over to iTunes and subscribe to us there via the podcast app and give us a 5-star review. Because it's so helpful for us in the rankings on iTunes and just helping people discover us and helping give us more sort of, I don't know, general clout to do more fun things, which would be amazing. So if you would like to do that for us, then we would be so happy. And thank you in advance. And this pipe is going to go up Monday on September 19th, and the Gilmore Girls Season 5 special is going to go up Wednesday or Thursday of this week. And then from now on, we're probably going to be recording the regular shows on the weekend and have specials sort of come up, if there are specials that week, come up in the middle of the week because of the schedules, recording changes. We will let you guys know on social media and all those usual stuff when to expect our normal episodes as we sort of adjust to scheduled changes and all that kind of stuff. But thank you so much for listening, and we hope that you have a wonderful week. Make sure you go check out the TV shows and movies and everything else we recommended, and head over to hypeable.com for all of your latest entertainment news stories. Until next time, my name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
And that's it.
Bye.
It's the end.
It's the end. Not the end of the world as we know it, just the end.
And I feel fine. Right. No, that's it.
Yeah. Good job.
Oh, I don't think you're muted, by the way. I'm hearing a...
Oh, no, I'm hearing that from... I thought that was you.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Skype.
Yeah.
That's what happens when it's listening in on you.
I know. I was going to say, if you're hearing a clink, I did just take a sip of coffee while I was muted and put my cup down, but...